How would you like to profit from sustainable property design? Kevin Cannon will tell us how to do this. And what's so special about Kevin is he's an internationally renowned architect with over 40 years of experience specializing in environmentally sustainable and innovative design. And as the founder and CEO of Beyond Zero DDC Incorporated, Kevin leads the development of zero carbon emission luxury eco resorts in remote wilderness locations worldwide, merging design excellence with ecological responsibility. And his extensive portfolio includes projects like the 1.5 million square foot Barclays North American headquarters, the Rodin Museum in Seoul, and multiple award-winning Bloomingdale's stores. And additionally, he led United Architects, finalist in the prestigious World Trade Center Design Competition. So, Kevin, tell us about profiting from sustainable property design. What would someone have to consider?
Property Wealth Strategies Podcast with Lily Patrashko shares world's most influential property investors, sharing their strategies for making money with property.
Well, so first of all, because our focus is on wilderness areas, inevitably you kind of sort of back into solving that problem. You're most of the times you're on in remote locations with very little access to resources, power, water, et cetera. And so, you know, you have to be able to self-sustain those properties. So from the get-go, it becomes a problem of utilizing the environment and utilizing alternative energy, for example, in order to create these properties. That's just the baseline. But beyond that, you know, we're really focused on our guests, and primarily we're focused on their well-being. We believe nature is regenerative. It's inherently in our DNA to convene with nature, and since we try to pick properties that are, you know, relatively remote. So when you look out, all you're looking out is beautiful vistas, untouched, and lands that we not only do we build, but we also conserve. So we basically work with nature in terms of building everything along the way. That's the sort of next order of how we build sustainably. And then, of course, the other part about it is we want to make sure that we're building for a long time. So sustainability in the sense of creating safe environments for our guests, as well as ensuring that the materials that we use, most of them are sourced locally. And so they're basically materials that work already in that particular environment wherever we're building our properties.
Thank you. Tell us about your top five projects that you've worked on to create sustainable property design. And what are you most proud of in terms of achievements?
Well, I've been working in this area practically my whole career. It's, I think it's just, it's part of it. It's just a sense of responsibility, to be able to build anything, and build typically the projects I'm involved in tend to be complex and large. Those types of structures demand a very sensitive approach to them, so that they're not impressive to the people who live in them or the people who have to pass by them on a daily basis. So in terms of actual accomplishments in the area, I think one of my favorite projects was one I did in China. It was the landmark building for a place called Eco City outside of Tianjin, and that in that case, our goal was not only to create a net zero building, but also to give back energy into the grid, and it was sort of a pilot project for them. This was done in probably around 2008, 2009, and that was not, that's still kind of in the infancy of what we're discussing today. So,
thank you. Why is it so important for someone to consider sustainability in their property design if they want to profit?
Well, yeah, no, I think it's I think if you value, let me put it this way. When people ask me about and I talk to a lot of people about investing in real estate. Now, real estate's not like investing in stock. And also your returns aren't guaranteed, you know, generally for the first 5 years, you know, until you stabilize your investment. So I think that the, and plus you're not going to hit it out of the park. I mean, if you get a 3x return or something, that's pretty good in real estate. But there are other aspects to real estate that I think are worth it. First of all, you're buying something. You're buying something tangible. It's not an intangible thing. And it's also something you can directly control. And so what I say to people is like, look, don't invest if this is something that you can't picture yourself living there or working there or being healed by this particular place, or you could see it passing along to your future generations, because that's what real estate really is. I mean, it's basically investing in something tangible, something real, and that has value beyond just what the immediate value is. It's basically something that reflects who you are. So if you can't pass that sort of basic threshold, don't invest, because it's not for the faint of heart. But it's also something that, if you do it right, has a lasting value, not only monetary value, but it also has personal value to you as a steward of the land that you purchase and what you do on it.
Thank you. Can large property developments really benefit from sustainability, especially when it comes to profit? Like, or would you say that generally it will only work in the longer term because of the trends?
You know, the thing about it is, what's been remarkable to me is that there are a lot of people in my line of work a couple of years ago who were saying, if energy policy starts to change, which it has changed dramatically in the U.S., that's really going to sort of kill alternative energy. Well, what's happened is that we've already gone past the threshold where there was this, alternative energy costs more, and I could get it another way, and et cetera. But the technology has advanced so much, and there's so much tension and investment in this technology. That's the part that I'm most excited about, because frankly, I look at what I do as a three-legged stool. You know, one, it's hospitality. Third is we build with nature, and the fourth is we utilize the latest in technology in order to do this. And so we're basically, almost a kind of cross between a luxury resort and a living laboratory for cool new technology. So that's also part of our revenue. It's like, you can't do small boutique hotels and only do it based on ADR or RevPAR. You have to look at the total amount of value you can bring to a place. And if you do it in the right way, so it's a destination, there are a lot of things that we can do to help people kind of restore their sense of well-being, their connection to nature. And also, you know, we get to show off a lot of very cool technology to the kinds of guests that we think are interested in that.
Thank you. Tell us your 10 commandments or your most important pillars for someone who wants to build a sustainable property design, where perhaps they want to meet well-being and healing with profitability and with a luxurious, innovative look.
Well, yeah, again, I think we're very focused on our guests. We do a lot of work and thinking about what's driving people today. And there has been a seismic shift, generational shift in terms of travel and particularly luxury travel. So sustainability is the new luxury. I mean, I think that generally that the people who are get to a certain part, a station in their life and now have the means to do good in that, they want to be able to experience this firsthand. So the first pillar is, how do we help people help them reestablish their connection with themselves, but through nature? So, you know, and through connection to other people. So that's the other part about this, is that the hotel industry has kind of gone through this cycle where there was a period there, not too long ago, like maybe 10, 20 years ago, where the epitome of luxury was just privacy. You know, you tended to see, especially in, let's call them eco resorts, a sort of design where you had like a head building, but lots of little houses strung out along like, beads on a string of pearls. And so, but the problem with that is that kind of privacy, it sounds great, but the service is lousy because, you know, if you're at the end of that string of pearls, good luck getting your hot towel when you need it. And that's key. Those are fundamental. Service is the fundamental driver of what makes a memorable stay, because you expect it to be there. And when it's not, when you're sitting there dripping wet, waiting for your towel to show up at your door, that's not good. And you'll remember that. So we, you know, obviously you got to solve those problems. But beyond that, you know, it's really, I think we just have to continue to listen and focus on what people want. And this trend towards privacy has now kind of shifted more towards a trend towards socializing. So either people tend to travel in groups now with their friends, their family, and or, you know, they like going places in small, intimate area, you know, small, intimate hotels where they can meet people from all over the world. I mean, the model, frankly, is a very old model. It's like if you go to old Swiss hotels, you can see them, you know, exactly that type of, you know, especially up in the mountains, you see exactly that kind of hospitality that I'm describing. So it's not really a particularly new idea. It's just one that's kind of come full circle. And that's the type of, those are the type of experiences that we're focused on.
Thank you. How does it generally work? Do property developers come to you and say, I want a sustainable property design for this building that I want to build? And then you kind of tell them, okay, this is what's possible for you based on roughly what you desire. Or is it that you kind of come up with a concept, because a lot of the times they don't even know what's possible?
Yeah, I know. I have crossed the threshold in where I am now the person driving the bus, you know, because I found that it's easier to convince investors, frankly, you know, to go along with this, especially if you're focused on their returns, and than it is to necessarily convince a client that they're wrong about something, you know. So I'd rather go in and say, here's what we're doing, I want input, you know, from everybody I want to, but I don't want to be in the position of saying, oh, okay, you don't really want this, you want it like this, and then it just becomes not always, usually it works out fine. But anyway, my point is I've just reached a point in my career when I think it's better to initiate something that's really innovative and cool, and you know, really the venture, the people that I want and have as investors are people who want to go to this place. You know, it's really the same thing. It's like looking for our ideal guests and our ideal investors. Guess what? They're basically the same people.
Thank you. What are some trends impacting sustainable property design aside from the socializing trend you mentioned earlier?
Well, I think the trends are our materials are getting better and better. You know, there's been a lot of work right now in mass timber, which something we have plenty of as wood still. And the remarkable advances in that technology, you know, where it's basically fireproof, more or less, you know, how you do it. So sort of counterintuitive, like a wood building would be fireproof, but that's basically, you know, how we make a lot of buildings these days. And, you know, and people like them because they're basically, not only are they wood on the outside, but they're wood on the inside. So, you know, you're almost living in, you know, high grade cabinetry. And so everything has a kind of new and old sort of feeling to it. So that's, I would say that's the most dominant one that you're seeing right now. It's really taken off here in North America. Not necessarily for very tall buildings yet. But that's at some point that's going to change as well. There's advances certainly in obviously in alternative energy, how we power these things, not just with solar energy, but geothermal is now becoming more affordable. There's even one of our partners is a company called Aquaria, and they're able to take and create potable drinking water right from the atmosphere. They're just taking the water that's already in our atmosphere, more than enough water in our atmosphere to provide enough water for us forever. And so that's a readily available source, and they've been able to, and there are other companies who are doing work like that. So those are the things that I'm interested in, is the cutting edge of technology and this kind of juxtaposing this with the sort of raw power of nature.
Thank you. Tell us some elements that are currently possible that perhaps most property developers are not aware of, that they exist and that they could dramatically enhance the quality of what they can offer. Because I ask you this because I've seen, for example, healing homes, homes that have like certain things in the house that will purify the water, that will, create electricity in a, a very powerful way. There's so many different elements. So tell us a few of those kind of elements.
Well, I think health and sustainability actually go hand in glove. This movement towards self-healing, which I think is very positive, and also people are just very focused on longevity, and being able to have people come to a place and essentially reset and give them the tools that they can go on and continue to live healthier, more sustainable lives. So I think it's really, you have to focus on that. Because if you don't have that, you really don't have very much. So so just continuing to look at things that you can do in your home. It's like, it doesn't cost that much if you have the room, to put in like a sauna, something that doesn't, could be enjoyable to you. There's a whole host of things that you could look at in terms of what's in your house, with the materials in your house, even just, planting, having plants in your house or trees or something. There's a phenomena called biophilia, and that's basically it's based on the supposition that people heal by being in nature, that having at least a view of trees and grass, or the ocean or what have you, that's very restorative, not just to your soul, but to your physical well-being as well.
Thank you. Are there any specific types of materials that are considered to be healthier and at the same time can be sourced in a sustainable manner?
Well, yeah, I think that the key to that is looking at the material, the information material. A lot of products that have a kind of eco sensibility will put that, they'll lead with that because they know there are people out there who are looking for that. And that ranges the gamut. It could be recycled material. There's a lot of interesting stuff, frankly, in the area of recycled plastics, where people are essentially accumulating plastics that have washed up from the beach, or they actually go out and get it, which is fine. I think that's a really healthy thing to do. But again, it just ranges from, there are other aspects as well, as sort of, ethically, essentially, how was it put together? Where did it come from? Who are the people who did it? How did they benefit from this product? The more and more that we can understand where everything comes from, who's affected by it, leave it up to the buyer to decide whether that, and having that information, is value for them in order to lead a more ethical and humanistic life.
Thank you. Is there any recycling or green aspect that impacts sustainable property design that you've already implemented into different property projects that you can tell us about in terms of something practical that people can implement into their property development projects as well that you thought was like, wow, very cool or technologically very cool?
That's a super good question. And I have to think about that because there's so many different ways that you can impact that. A lot of them are stuff that people don't see. It's like if you decide to source material from somewhere, and then it's there's certainly a lot of very interesting recycled projects. There's for individual homes, there are ways in which you can heat your home through biofuels, and so those things are, I think, very cool. Anything to get you sort of off the grid, especially if you live in an area where the grid is coming from a coal-producing plant or oil-driven or what have you. So that's where I think the rubber hits the road. So there are a lot of cool things you can do. You get them at Home Depot, and you can instantly, I think, have an impact on your environment.
Thank you. Tell us about how do sustainable homes produce energy?
Produce energy. So typically, what you have with a sustainable home is that most of them are hooked up to the grid already, but they have alternate, energy sources. They might have a horizontal geothermal or solar panels. That's mostly what you see in the U.S. A few small windmill sort of designs, but that you don't see that very often. But those are the principal two that people install in their homes. And basically, what it does is that it and you have a battery storage, right? So it generates energy that you need to drive your home, whatever your demand is on that home, electrical demand. And whatever is not being used is stored in a battery. Once it gets to a certain threshold, its battery capacity, it then sends it back to the grid. And they pay you back. You get, a rebate for any amount of surplus energy that you produce. So not only are you, reducing your carbon footprint because you're not using the energy that's coming from, the coal plant. I'm being dramatic. It's not always coal, but anyway, sometimes it is. But you're not doing that. But at the same time, you're using alternative energy to give back and reduce the amount of energy that those plants are required to produce. So everybody benefits. Not to mention the fact that you reduce your price that you pay on your utilities, and you have greater control over your environment.
Thank you. Are there any particular materials that you're a big fan of to create a sustainable property design? Like, I don't know, marble or a particular type of wood or any particular materials you're a massive fan on the fan of that you use all of the time in most properties?
Well, I'm a big fan of something called CLT, which is cross-laminated timber, and it's incredibly resilient. As I said, it's basically fire resistant, and it's essentially made from really small pieces of wood that are then all glued together. And with it, you can do a lot of very cool things with it. And so, and they're structural. They have structural capacity, so they're load bearing. You can use them in lieu of, doing some concrete columns or a lot of steel in your drywall constructions, things like that. And generally, if people were given the choice, oh, you could live in this room, like this room I'm in right now, and instead of it being sheetrock everywhere, it could be wood. I think most people would go, hey, I'll take the wood, right? It's just a much warmer environment and one in which I think people can instantly understand the value of. So that's, we pitch that a lot.
Thank you. How do you manage beauty and sustainability and cost? Like, how do they kind of all work together to help an investor to profit the most from sustainable property design? And do you also mix that with feng shui, or do you use any of the information around like the frequency of certain materials to enhance the vibe of a certain place? And the reason I ask you this is because I really don't know anything about architecture or property development, like design. I really don't know anything, okay? But what I do know is that every time I go, for example, to the Mandarin Hotel in Dubai, and not just to that particular hotel, and I'm talking a lot of the Dubai hotels, I'm not sure what they do, but they seem to be investing a lot either in like high quality materials that create like a high frequency environment. And every time you go there, I feel so great, and I don't have a headache, and I don't have a migraine.
Well, there's a reason for that.
And I have no idea why.
Well, there's a reason for that. Guess what they do? Like at very high end hotels, they pump more oxygen into the rooms. So your rooms are everywhere is a little more oxygenated. So, you know, if you go to like really great hotels, people describe it as they're feeling very calm and very sleepy almost. That's because you're breathing more oxygen. So that's part of it. So that's the physiological part of it. But yeah, beyond that, it's also just the fact that the hotels are built on trust. If you lose trust with your guests, it's game over. So and now we have the tools, so we know everything about you, pretty much, you know, before you get to the hotel. So, you know, people there know your name, know a little bit about what you're interested in. So those are service points that are really important. And then in terms of the environment itself, you know, like the trend right now is kind of a little bit more minimalist. You know, for me, I think it sometimes becomes a little too minimal. But it's usually typically have great art programs. They'll have something like almost archaeological. You know, if you're going to a place, you can understand a little bit about the history of the place itself. Typically, they'll have, you know, plants that are native plants or flowers that are native flowers. All those little details all add up. But a lot of times they'll also have, you know, materials that are made from the earth, you know. So for example, I think you mentioned Mandarin Dubai, right? Is that what you said? Yeah. So what's interesting about, and I've gone to a lot of hotels in Dubai, and Dubai is fantastic for hotels. I mean, that's the reason to go, because the hotels are all super great. But what's interesting is that very few hotels in Dubai, reference the fact that it's a desert. And the desert, if you go outside of Dubai, if you ever travel outside, you know, it's a really incredible place. It's a lot more interesting than people think it is. It's not just all sand dunes and, you know. So, you know, there are things that you can do with desert and sand, for example, there's a thing called rammed earth where you can actually take the earth itself and use it as wall construction. And it has this beautiful, almost like sandstone like quality to it. So to me, I always look for cues like that. You know, is this another Mandarin hotel that could be anywhere in the world, or is this a Mandarin hotel? And I don't want to pick on Mandarin hotel. I happen to like Mandarin hotel a lot, but anyway, but is this a Mandarin hotel that lets me know the second I've arrived that I'm at a different place? You know, this is like nothing I've seen before, and yet it feels so rooted in the particular location of where it's in. So I instantly feel like I'm, you know, I pick a city, you know, Paris or Dubai or Beijing or, you know, wherever, you know. So it's that's what I'm looking for. You know, it's a hotel. The timeless hotels are connected to their place. And when you walk in, you feel like you belong. right? That's really, because, like, you know, traveling is for a lot of people scary. You know, you're getting outside of your comfort zone, you're going to someplace else, you know, it's chaotic, you don't speak the language, etc. But if you can walk into that hotel and feel like you're at home, that's the key to making those hotels work.
Thank you. Tell me, though, why is it that in certain five-star hotels that are both beautiful, why is it that I feel so much better, for example, in the Mandarin Oriental? For example, because I'm traveling to Global Family Office Investment Summits, where I'm a speaker. And I've been to Cannes, I've been to Miami, I've been to Dubai. And I find that the Mandarin Oriental in particular just has this great energy flow. And it could be what you said earlier about the super oxygenated rooms and really incredible design. But I'm wondering, is there anything in the frequency of the materials that as well makes a massive difference? And is it something around the positioning of the materials as well, like how you put it in a certain direction? Or, like, do you leverage any sort of like feng shui or any other interior design techniques to generate this kind of flow? And the reason I ask you this, because this is really critical, okay? So yeah. I find that every time I go to the Family Office Investment Summit in Dubai, I feel like there's so many people that want to talk to me. Like, I'm this queen bee where everyone is kind of like attracted to me, and I'm like, I feel really great and I'm doing so much business. And then I'm going perhaps to Miami and it's still there, but it's like a 70% level versus the 100% that is in Dubai. And I really have no idea why.
Oh, that could be a cultural difference, you know, for one thing. I think that, you know, if you're going to anywhere in Miami, I guarantee you most of the people there probably live in Miami or you know, or they're an hour or 2 hours away in terms of travel. I mean, so it's a little different, you know. I mean, I generally find when I go to like Dubai, everybody is sort of more, you know, kind of, it's Dubai is much more international in a lot of ways. I mean, Miami, it's international too, but it tends to be more Latin America, North America, and some European. But, you know, Dubai is, you know, everybody. And so I think that's part of it, I'm guessing. I don't know if there's anything in particular about that, but I'd have to look at the hotel in more detail to understand if there's some sort of difference between the Mandarin in Dubai and the, you know, let's say, I don't even know what the Mandarin in Miami is. I'm assuming they have one, but I'm not familiar with it. The one in Dubai, I know. So,
thank you. And do you find that there's any difference in terms of the frequency emitted by a certain material versus others? In terms of, like, do you feel physically different?
Every material has a frequency. So I think, you know, on that, I know there's a lot of work right now done into the neurological aspects of building, and that has a lot to do with not only material but just the shape of the, you know, the room itself, and or, you know, its degree of openness or whatever, and obviously feng shui deals in that to some degree, in that energy flow. It's a obviously the people who practice feng shui, you know, are themselves specialists in that. I don't know, you know, it's I just generally try and create rooms and places and buildings that people can discover something about themselves, but, you know, not in an overly intimidating way. So I don't know. You know, it's interesting. I probably don't know enough about it, frankly, you know, to opine as an expert on this. I think you probably know a lot more than I do. So I'll just, you know, I'll just tune into your speech
Thank
and
you.
See for myself and learn.
Tell us about your favorite sustainable property design, aside from the one that you mentioned in China. Are there any particular elements that you included in there? Like, I don't know, a hyperbaric chamber, I don't know, a certain type of bathtub. Give us some elements that you included in that particular property development deal that you were, you know, that gave you that kind of wow feeling. Because I find, I really love luxury buildings, and every time I'm in one that feels really awesome, that I just, you know, look at it and I just feel like, wow, that's just such an amazing feeling. And it makes you feel, it's almost like it's healing your body as you're there.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I've done some very interesting private homes, like big penthouses on top of buildings. And a couple in Tribeca, in New York City, and for very discerning clients, where the sort of ritual of bathing and healing, which, you know, having gyms or, you know, what have you, as well as, but beyond that, you know, it's trying to create rooms where they can meditate, they can just tune out everything. And, you know, I think that's very good for people. I'm a big advocate of AI for one principal reason, is that I think we have to reclaim more time for ourselves. You know, I think we need to, you know, that it'll be a good thing for people if they have their AI agents working for them while they can take care of their own well-being. And unfortunately right now, that's for ultra high net worth individuals can do that because they can afford to do it and they can hire a bunch of people to do that. I'm saying that we should really be focusing on how we could do that for everybody, whether that's communal areas that people can go to. There's a lot of interesting work right now on people developing like bathhouses and communal bathhouses. And that's something that I think in Europe is a lot more prevalent. And in the US, it's a brand new thing. I mean, so we'll see. We'll see how this goes. But, you know, I think that's an experiment that we're seeing a lot of people try to capitalize on.
Thank you. Are there any particular systems or technologies that you recommend to include in sustainable property design? I'm talking about, for example, for bathrooms. Do you have certain water filtering systems or certain, technology that make people's lives better?
Well, you know, I think there's lots of highly sustainable things. I mean, first of all, you know, generally, when we're talking about sustainability, we're talking about energy and use of energy. But it also translates into the materials of how we do things. But also, frankly, the part that I think a lot of people miss is that there's a craft element to sustainability looking for, obviously, you're looking for your furniture, for example. There are incredible studios, a lot of them small studios, you know, piloted by young people, kind of startups, it's whatever, who are doing incredible things with design. So it's beautiful, and the work that they use is highly sustainable, and how they craft it and put it together is very intentional. Buying pieces, you know, for your home, which is anybody can do at this point. It seems to me that that's the kind of stuff I find incredible. And it goes from everything from wall coverings to furniture to, you know, your linen on your bed and, you know, whatever, you know, anything that's sort of tactile and something that has an effect on your environment. Those are the kinds of things that you should be looking at. You know, it's not just, I need a better heating system, a more efficient way to deliver air conditioning. I think it's really just about making your environment a more sort of healing environment. And we know that wood in particular, it's just, we have this kind of inherent affinity towards wood and done well and craftsmanship. You know, it's something that's done uniquely. It's not necessarily, it shows personality. It just, it's not kind of machine-made products as much as anything else. So those are the my advice for, you know, people who are looking to sort of live a little bit more sustainably is, you know, just go on the internet and look for companies that advertise themselves in terms of that way. And then in the area of home furnishings, that would be my place to start.
Thank you. What about regular people, regular, ordinary people that just want
to? Yeah, I mean, regular people. I mean, regular people. Typically, you can find the same product or the same design of the product done cheaper. And, you know, there's a lot of very good, you know, furniture that comes from China that are sort of knockoffs of this. The problem is that and obviously cost is important to this. So, but you know, if you can afford not maybe 12 pieces, but one piece, that's a place to start. And then, you know, as you get older and you do better in your life, you know, maybe you'll buy another one. But even if it's just this one piece that says something to you and speaks to you, I think that's worth it. And, you know, it's something that can make your life a little bit better.
Thank you. Do you have a sustainable home? And if so, what kind of elements did you include in it to make you feel great?
Well, we have three homes. My favorite home is in, and it's right on the water in Maine. And it was built, it's about, 70, 75 years old. But it was built in this really beautiful way where there was just a granite outcropping, and the main house is sort of built into the land. So it, you know, the house goes up and down and it just moves with the land. And it's very simple. It's all wood. And then we have a few little outhouses for guest houses, and some of them actually sort of cantilever out over the rocks, and it's right at the point, so it's ocean completely, 180 degree view. It's an older house, but what's interesting is the guy who put it together wasn't an architect. He was just a builder to do it, but he did it in such a sensitive way that, you know, to me, it's still my favorite place to go, and, you know, for everybody. So
thank you. Can a place like Dubai, where, you know, it's kind of like in the middle of the desert, and I don't know if they produce anything locally, can they really have sustainable property design?
Yeah, look, I say you can do a lot with sand, you know, if that's all you've got. But, you know, they have sand, rock. They do have different types of trees, and certainly, you know, they can go beyond that as well. So, yeah, no, I think that there's a lot that Dubai can do. I just did a casino in Vegas, it's not dissimilar to Dubai in terms of being in the middle of a desert, and, you know, and we used a lot of sort of local materials in that. And so, yeah, there's no reason Dubai can't do that. There's been a propensity to have very modern, very sleek, very thing, but that's, you know, I think that's just the first wave. I think ultimately what happens is that Dubai becomes more established and you know, speaks to different things. You're going to see a lot more of the sort of traditional lessons, you know, of Dubai architecture, or, you know, essentially the whole coast of the Persian Gulf, is that essentially spawned a little bit more to its own identity. We'll see. But it's not all going to be totally sci-fi. You know, I think that at some point, you know, there can be an element to that, but I think ultimately, I think if they're going to try to cater to a certain level of refined traveler, they're going to have to do a little bit better than that. But, you know, we're talking, and again, my focus is on small, you know, 42 room, 45 room max hotels. So it's not like the big mega hotels in Dubai, which, you know, again, there are lots of them, and a lot of them do very well, and they're terrific.
Thank you. Tell us where investors can connect with you.
The easiest place to connect with me is on LinkedIn. I'm there. So you just have to, or you just Google Kevin Kennan. There's only one of me. That'll get you to me somehow. And, you know, and I like talking to people. People have a problem, you know, they want to solve. I like doing that. And so, you know, just, I'm pretty approachable. All you have to do is, you know, DM me or call me or what have you. And,
Thank you.
Leave a message, and I'll get back to you when I can. And if I can help you, I will.
Follow me for more property wealth strategies.